The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, a week ago, I thought we all agreed on the need to protect teenage Nova Scotians from flavored tobacco products. After all, our young Nova Scotians are being targeted by kiddie tobacco flavors such as honeyberry, peach, and cherry vanilla. Then the government gutted its own bill, Mr. Speaker, removing any ban on these products. The Minister of Health has been unable to explain this outrageous flip-flop. I'll ask the Premier, can he explain why his government flip-flopped on such an important thing as banning flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, let me congratulate the Minister of Health for putting before this House the most progressive piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker. On e-cigarettes, Mr. Speaker, in the entire country, we are going to ensure, Mr. Speaker, that that piece of legislation passes this session so that small business operators can adapt. Mr. Speaker, recognizing there will be no advertising that will be permitted, that product needs to be hidden away from the sight of any customer, Mr. Speaker. And on top of that, the Minister of Health is committed to listening to Nova Scotians going out through consultation. We will bring in, Mr. Speaker, legislation that will deal with flavored tobacco, and it will be implemented by May 31st, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me correct the Premier. It was progressive tobacco legislation until the Minister removed the most important parts of the bill, which are to protect young Nova Scotians from flavoured tobacco, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Health himself admits it's a flawed bill. How it got all the way to the floor of this House under his watch with such flaws in it is beyond us, Mr. Speaker, but while the government reconsiders its position and takes its time, 3,600 teenage Nova Scotians will take up smoking using flavoured tobacco. Surely that is enough information for us to act now in this House to protect them from these awful products. So will the Premier agree to put the ban on flavoured tobacco back into the bill before this session ends?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, once again, the Leader of the Conservative Party is misleading this House, Mr. Speaker. He knows full well the stats that he's bringing forward are not accurate, Mr. Speaker. What we know for certain is that the Minister of Health has tabled in this House the most progressive piece of legislation around e-cigarettes in this country, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, we know full well, Mr. Speaker, that this government listened to Nova Scotians and law amendments. We will make sure that when we bring in legislation around flavored tobacco, that no young Nova Scotian, Mr. Speaker, will have access to that. Unlike previous governments, Mr. Speaker, this government will listen to Nova Scotians and ensure that legislation will prevent any tobacco company from finding a way around it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, clearly the government is not listening to the Canadian Cancer Society because they are the ones that did the study that said 3,600 teenage Nova Scotians will take up smoking in the next year while they study their navel on something as important as this, and they will be smoking flavored tobacco, including flavors like blue raspberry, pina colada, cotton candy, Mr. Speaker. That might be now okay with the Liberal government, but is not okay with us. They can study all they want, but my question to the Premier is, what more information could they possibly need than the 3,600 young Nova Scotians who are going to be provided with pina colada-flavoured tobacco in order to do the right thing and put that ban back in the bill?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I wonder if the Honourable Member actually read the bill. Mr. Speaker, I wonder if the Honourable Member actually read the bill. Mr. Speaker, it was May 31st when the bill was going to become law, Mr. Speaker, when it came to flavoured tobacco. Mr. Speaker, what we brought in place is an issue to deal around e-cigarettes. And every small business owner who deals with that will want to know. Mr. Speaker, there is no advertising, Mr. Speaker, to ensure, Mr. Speaker, that that is hidden out of the sight of all of their customers, Mr. Speaker. We want to give them the opportunity to bring that in. On the flip side, Mr. Speaker, we want to make sure when we're dealing with flavored tobacco that there is no possibility for big tobacco to find a way around it. Mr. Speaker, I want to remind all members of this House, remember when the Conservative federal government tried to deal with big tobacco, Mr. Speaker? They left a loophole. This Liberal government in Nova Scotia will leave no loophole.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
What about the menthol thing there? That was a big one. Just tell us that's why you pulled it back, and I'll be okay with that one. Well, we will. Yeah, definitely. And it's coming up a little later. Premier, I hope you stay around to listen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier, and first I'd like to extend again our condolences to the Premier and his family on the loss of his brother. Last week, while the Premier was away, Mr. Speaker, the government backed away from a significant tobacco control measure that would have taken flavored tobacco out of the hands of our young people. And I know Nova Scotians are asking, Mr. Speaker, what's the logic of that climb down, that flip-flop? So my question to the Premier is this. Why has his government decided to allow the continued sale of flavored tobacco in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, let me say through you to the Leader of the Democratic Party how much I appreciate the kind words that she's expressed, members of this House expressed towards me and my family over the last week. Mr. Speaker, I want to again tell you that we have before us one of the most progressive pieces, the most progressive piece of legislation in the country when it comes to e-cigarettes, Mr. Speaker. As well, Mr. Speaker, we will ensure that we meet the timeline of May 31st when it comes to flavored tobacco. But what I've been hearing from Nova Scotians is finally a government actually listened in law amendments and said we need to make sure there are absolutely no loopholes in this piece of legislation. We want to make sure that we keep flavored tobacco out of the hands of young Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, on the timeline that was committed, unlike what happened, Mr. Speaker, in other provinces.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remind the Premier that there wasn't a single presenter at law amendments who spoke in favour of flavoured tobacco except, Mr. Speaker, for organised tobacco lobbyists or consultants. Those are simply the facts, Mr. Speaker. So I asked the Premier if he could explain how the only people he seems to be listening to are tobacco lobbyists.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I again want to thank the Honourable Member for her question, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind this House, we have before us a piece of legislation that is the most progressive in the country when it comes to e-cigarettes, which is being held up by the two opposition parties, Mr. Speaker. We're going to ensure that that piece of legislation passes. We keep that product, Mr. Speaker, out of the way. We eliminate advertising when it comes to that, Mr. Speaker. And at the same time, Mr. Speaker, this party is going to do what no other government has been able to do in the history, quite frankly, of this country. When we bring in flavored tobacco legislation, Mr. Speaker, there will be no loophole, unlike there was at the national level. We will ensure that we protect our children on the timeline that's committed in that piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker.
It's do I have the wrong sheet? It's Wednesday. Oh, my apologies. I'm skipping ahead here. I have the right sheet. Sorry. The leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I understand that the Premier has his talking points about this being progressive legislation, but Mr. Speaker, this is anything but progressive legislation when it comes to tobacco control, Mr. Speaker. Last week, the Minister of Health said that his views on flavored tobacco had been clear. He supports banning it, Mr. Speaker. Yet, last week, the minister was given his marching orders to do a flip-flop on this bill. So I want to ask the Premier if he could please explain his role in the government's dramatic shift in direction related to flavored tobacco.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member that there were people before law amendments, Mr. Speaker, that party has stood in this House complaining about the fact that this legislation wasn't tough enough on flavoured tobacco, Mr. Speaker. We've actually listened, Mr. Speaker. We're going to make sure that when we bring in legislation on flavoured tobacco, that we're going to deal with that issue. What is their problem, Mr. Speaker? They can't have it both ways. They can't stand up and criticise the piece of legislation when we're prepared to amend it to ensure that we cover every possibility to eliminate flavored tobacco on behalf of Nova Scotians. Why are they complaining about it? Why don't they, Mr. Speaker, join the chorus of Nova Scotians and ensure that we eliminate any loophole, Mr. Speaker, that would be in that legislation?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians were relieved on the weekend to learn that a dangerous offender who had mistakenly been released was back in custody, thanks to the police. This is not the first time an offender has been let loose by accident, Mr. Speaker. It's happened many times. The last time it happened, the now Minister of Economic Development said, and I quote, "This most recent instance does nothing to inspire confidence that the system has improved." And he called on the government to do, as I quote, There are security protocols that need to be reconsidered at this point, and one would think the government would undertake what measures are at its disposal. So, Mr. Speaker, I will ask the Premier, what security protocols has his government put in place to reassure Nova Scotians that the province's correction system is working and keeping our communities safe?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, let me express my great appreciation to law enforcement officers across this province, Mr. Speaker. Time and time again respond to the needs of Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, one of the things that was loud and clear is that the Minister of Justice, the Attorney General in this province, expressed the frustration that she had and the department had, and made it very clear to all members of this House and all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister of Justice will get to the bottom of what happened under this particular situation, and we will respond in a way that ensures we protect Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, that's all very well and good, Mr. Speaker, but the question was, what security protocols has the government put in place during his term in office, or even in the last few days, as the Minister of Economic Development recommended and, in fact, insisted be done? So I know that the Minister of Justice is frustrated, and all Nova Scotians are frustrated, and they want to know what's been done and what's going to be done. So now we have an investigation. I'll ask the Premier, will he confirm to this House that the investigation is already underway and that the results will be made public so that Nova Scotians can have confidence in their correction system?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I can assure the Honourable Member, all members of this House and all Nova Scotians, that this government, Mr. Speaker, is already on the way to finding out what happened when it came to the release of that prisoner. But I also want to tell all members of this House, Mr. Speaker, unlike the Conservative Party, we're not going to have tough talk on crime. We're going to deliver, Mr. Speaker, on tough action.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. On Friday morning, the Central Nova Scotia Correctional Facility mistakenly released a man charged with attempted murder and six other offences, as we just spoke about. In the spring of 2009, in the days following an accidental release from the same facility, the now Minister of Economic Development called on the Justice Minister of the day to resign. Member for Richmond went on to say, to suggest Nova Scotians they should continue to have confidence in this minister or even confidence in this government's ability to handle the justice system, I don't think anyone's going to buy it. How does the minister feel about the comments of her cabinet colleague today, now that she is responsible for the same offence he once considered grounds for dismissal?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to reiterate my appreciation, and I want to thank the police for bringing back the offender quickly and without incident. I was very clear last week, and I didn't mince my words, that was completely unacceptable. I committed to all Nova Scotians that we would be transparent and we will find out what went wrong, and this we are doing. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, it's been one full week since this dangerous individual was released. How much longer will Nova Scotians have to wait for the minister to tell them exactly what happened to lead to this dangerous individual's accidental release?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. An internal investigation is underway, and I expect that would be wrapped up next week sometime. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, in February of this year, this government announced it would be doing a comprehensive review of taxes, fees, and regulations. And the Minister of Finance said, and I quote, "Our goal is to have a tax and regulatory system that supports private sector growth and economic development." And Mr. Speaker, last week, the minister told the media the tax review was at the printers. So my question to the minister is this: if the report was at the printers last week, when can we expect the minister to table the tax review in this House?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. This is a very topical issue, certainly, for Nova Scotians, and I also appreciate that many people are anxious to see the results of the tax review, as are all of us as well. So I wanted to just answer the member opposite to let her know that it will take time for it to be prepared. It will be within the month. I've said so. It will be within the month that we will see the results of that, and the report will be made available to everybody.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much. Well, Mr. Speaker, the timeline seems to be slipping a bit because I heard the Minister also say that the middle of the month the Minister would be making this review available. The Minister is well aware that many Nova Scotians are looking forward to this review, and so I want to ask the Minister if she'll commit to tabling the report during this session of our legislature, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I'm pleased to rise on this question and to address it with the member opposite. As soon as I get that report, the members of this legislature will also be getting that report. So I can promise you that.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Justice. When a prisoner was accidentally released in February 2012, a report found it to be due to employees not handcuffing or keeping careful watch of the prisoner while he was being transported. At the time, the now Minister of Economic Development told reporters, "There are basic operative requirements to ensure the safety of Nova Scotians that are not being followed." And Mr. Speaker, we share the concerns of the Minister that he had back in 2012. So today we ask the simple question, were basic operative requirements followed by the department last week?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I will again inform the members of the House that an internal investigation is underway. Once the report is complete, which I expect it to be at some point next week, we will release it and provide a complete explanation of what led to this incident. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Releasing dangerous criminals is obviously unacceptable. It puts all Nova Scotians at serious risk. An official at the Department of Justice told reporters, "We will be looking at policies and procedures and we'll be looking at staff conduct." He went on to say, "Appropriate corrective action will be taken." So my question today for the Minister is, will the Minister tell the members of this House and all Nova Scotians what form that corrective action might take?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We in the Justice Department are always looking at our procedures. We're always looking at our actions, and we're always training and working with our correctional services officers, with the unions, with our health and occupation safety. So this is being done all the time, every time. And of course, as I said last week and will say again today, and many of you can rise and ask me the same question over and over again, of course, this is not to be taken lightly. This is very serious. And this is why I will not make any presumptions today about what went wrong, but we will get the answers. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. The Consumer Advocate wants a plan in place starting in 2015 to eliminate the $96 million in unpaid fuel costs ratepayers are currently on the hook for, Mr. Speaker. According to the Consumer Advocate, if we don't deal with this debt now, it will end up costing consumers an additional $7 million in the future, Mr. Speaker. But instead of listening to the concerns of the consumers, the Minister of Energy is backing Nova Scotia Power's desire to defer the payment of fuel costs into 2016. So through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, my question is, what information has Nova Scotia Power provided to him to prove their approach is the best approach for ratepayers?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I want to thank the member for the question. I find it intriguing that suddenly the NDP likes what the Consumer Advocate has to say when they disagreed with almost everything he said when they were in government. Mr. Speaker, I agree with the Consumer Advocate that the fuel deferral has to come down, but as I've said repeatedly in this House, in fact, there are ways to do it without going into the pockets of ratepayers. For example, the $33 million that ratepayers overpaid last year, which could be returned to them and bring the deferral down without going to ratepayers.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, Mr. Speaker, it's fun now that he's over there how much he loves Nova Scotia Power. So, Mr. Speaker, as we heard from the Minister of Energy in question period on November 4, he isn't worried about the close to $100 million in unpaid fuel costs, Speaker, because he states, and I quote, the deferred amounts of fuel can continue to decrease without going back to ratepayers. So my question to the Minister of Energy through you, Speaker, if the Minister is wrong and $100 million in fuel costs don't magically vanish into thin air, what is he prepared to do to guarantee ratepayers aren't forced to hand over $7 million to NSP?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, if the member was paying attention, he would know that the Consumer Advocate is not even suggesting the whole amount would come down in year one. Second of all, it is no longer $100 million. It's already come down to $86.7 million, so we've already actually dropped by $13 million. And again, Mr. Speaker, instead of keeping $33 million in the pockets of Nova Scotia Power, like these two parties want to do, we think that should be returned to ratepayers to reduce the fuel deferral without raising their bills.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. We have two federal prisons in Nova Scotia. We consistently hear of problems at the provincial institution in Burnside. Meanwhile, there are minimal issues at the other two prisons. It is obvious there are significant problems at Burnside that must be addressed. Has the government considered adopting federal procedures to ensure our prisons and our communities are kept safe?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We've talked and talked quite a bit about our correctional facilities, and in particular to the one in Burnside. Look, correctional services are well-equipped and perform a very difficult job managing offenders who at times act violently. We do our best to ensure that that we react appropriately to all these incidents. As I said, now, one other thing is we are building a jail, which is soon to open in the next few months, and that will definitely relieve a lot of the pressure off of our Burnside facility. So that is something that is ongoing, and we hope in a few months that will help us. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, Spring Hill, one of the federal institutions, has a capacity of 550 offenders. And according to the department's website, the Burnside prison has a capacity of half that number. Now, I can appreciate the danger that these people work in, that are working in these institutions. But to me, Mr. Speaker, it comes down to the management of them. That is where the key is to making things safer. And why, my question is, why is the management of the federal system so much more competent at ensuring community safety than the provincial system?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My colleague on the other side talks about the federal versus provincial procedures, protocols, and so on. What I will do is, if he has any specific notes or any specific information that he wishes to raise with me, to please do that, and I will certainly have my staff look at it. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, the Minister of Health was questioned about home care wait lists, and he said, I quote, "We're moving to what will be a competitive model," end quote. And I'll table that from answer to Mr. Speaker. When asked if he was considering moving from the not-for-profit healthcare model of delivery to a for-profit model, the Minister of Health said, and I quote, "We know that probably in the home support area, there will be some changes, in fact, that will improve the system," end quote. And I've tabled that with the other document, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, what changes will the Minister of Health be making to the home care system?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. We know that this is the area in terms of our policy where we want to improve upon, expand care for our seniors is in the home as opposed to building more nursing homes. So in order to do that, we put an additional $30 million into the budget this year. But in some cases, we are not getting the best deal because contracts have simply been handed to providers. In terms of making it competitive, the one thing we can assure Nova Scotians is that governments and public monies to provide home care will be the strongest part of the future.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When the government passed the Bill 30 last spring, it denied home care workers a 50-cent increase in their hourly wage. Now we hear from the Minister potentially hinting changes that may include moving to a for-profit model. So my question is very simple to the Minister. Can the Minister of Health commit to maintaining not-for-profit home support services in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We currently have a mix in the province of private and public care to our seniors in the home. We as a government are committed to public dollars and most likely additional dollars to make sure that home care, in accordance with our update of the continuing care strategy, remains not just strong, but we see gradual improvements. The current problem is that we have a tremendous discrepancy in the cost of delivery from one county to another, and we simply have to get maximum home care for every dollar that we invest. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Energy. In a briefing note prepared for the Minister and obtained by our office via FOIPOP, the Minister was advised that production of the Sable Offshore Energy Project continues to decline. It's uncertain how much natural gas even Deep Panuk will be able to produce. Additionally, in the same briefing document, warns the Minister that demand for natural gas continues to increase in Nova Scotia and is expected to exceed supply produced offshore for the next year or so. Moreover, the Minister has advised that Nova Scotia will need to import natural gas from other jurisdictions like New Brunswick and Western Canada. In light of this, will the Minister reconsider his support for the Premier's irresponsible decision to ban the development of onshore shale gas development?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we would not be in this situation with hydraulic fracturing at the moment if that particular member did not sit in a cabinet in 2007 and allow hydraulic fracturing in this province without the regulations in place, without a way to deal with the wastewater. And so, Mr. Speaker, here we are 7 years later still trying to deal with wastewater because we tried it the Tory way. Now we are doing it the responsible way.
Honourable House Leader for the official opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And at least our caucus and our cabinet was open for jobs and the economy in Nova Scotia. Unlike what these guys are doing on trying to ban something that's a good way for good jobs in Nova Scotia. In the same briefing note, Mr. Speaker, the minister was advised that the number of companies have stated their interest in exporting liquefied natural gas to Nova Scotia. However, the minister was advised that large-scale LNG export project requires significant volumes of natural gas, which are two big programs that might be coming to Nova Scotia. In fact, the document stated that gas supply remains the biggest challenge for these projects. With this in mind, can the minister explain why he is supporting the premier's ban on shale gas development, a new way of creating jobs, increasing Nova Scotia's natural gas supply, and unleashing the economic potential of our province?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, and the Honourable Member will forget the fact that the three wells that they approved and left a mess for Nova Scotians, and not only that, was a net cost to Nova Scotia that we are still trying to deal with at the moment. 7 years later, in fact, not only that, came up dry. So, Mr. Speaker, I will table for the House the press release from Bearhead last week, noting that not only have they addressed the supply issue after having meetings with political leaders, including the Minister of Economic Development, the Premier, and myself here in Halifax, but the fact they've identified 15 SDLs as well as sources outside. Moreover, Mr. Speaker, they need sources that begin in 2018, which you could allow hydraulic fracturing in this province today without the regulations, without the way to deal with wastewater, and it still wouldn't solve the problem for those projects.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, rural Nova Scotians who wanted to raise a small number of turkeys were forced last spring to sign a purchase guarantor agreement with the Turkey Farmers of Nova Scotia. I will table that agreement. Mr. Speaker, this agreement stipulates that the poults purchased for home consumption were not for resale or for any business or to any business or individual. It also quotes Regulation 9.1 that says no producer shall market turkeys in Nova Scotia or elsewhere without a valid marketing license issued by the Turkey Board. What it doesn't say is that the same regulations exempt any producer who markets less than 25 turkeys in any control period in Regulation Number 10. And I will table that. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is the minister aware of this overreaching waiver that hurts rural Nova Scotia and small producers who want to grow a small number of turkeys and sell them?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The idea of that regulation is for people that want to have them for their own consumption. There is allotments available through the Turkey Marketing Board for people that want to grow and market turkeys.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister for that answer. The document that I just tabled states that anyone who markets less than 25, so that the regulations state that anyone who wants to grow and market turkeys less than the number of 25, so 24 or less, is allowed to in Regulation Number 10. So my question for the minister is, will the minister demand this coming spring that the Turkey Marketing Board stop using this waiver, which does not agree with their own with the Act?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. I thank the Minister for the member, not the Minister, maybe someday, but the member for the question. And indeed, this is a very important issue, one that we've been discussing here in quite length at the Legislature. Indeed, there is a quota available for anyone that wants to produce turkeys in the province. They have to approach the Marketing Board, and I believe it costs $150 for this license. Once they get the license, they can do whatever they want with the turkeys. And indeed, the Turkey Marketing Board will actually give them expertise for that as well.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll table two charts from the Department of Health on home care wait lists. one from April and one from October, Mr. Speaker, and the news is not good. In the last 6 months, we've seen the number of people on the home care wait list in Annapolis Valley increased by 53. In Lunenburg County, it was up by 56. The grand total of people on the home care wait list province-wide is now 760 people, up from 422 just a short 6 months ago, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, why has the Minister of Health allowed the home care wait list to grow so quickly over the last 6 months?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We all know, Nova Scotians know, that there's an enormous challenge now as we move from, more in nursing homes to keeping people in their homes. That's the statement we've heard loud and clear, that people want to be there. We are actually in some areas. We don't have all of the qualified people to deliver home care. Now looking at making sure that additional classes can come forward with CNAs, LPNs. We need to make sure that we have the right number of providers. And the member opposite is correct. We have two or three areas that indeed are under currently enormous pressure.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's not just the 760 people waiting on the wait list that are affected. It's, of course, their families and their caregivers who are supporting them at this time. Many of them are waiting in hospitals, Mr. Speaker. They are waiting and their families are worried. It's the Minister of Health's job to address the concerns of families and patients and react, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, what steps has the Minister taken to address the specific concerns of the 760 people and their families on the wait list for home care services?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. One of the areas that we have started to address is to look at prioritizing. We, of course, have people in hospital that do need to get home and make sure that they have home care, whether it's VON nursing or whether it's a home support provider that will help them make that next step. And so one of the areas that we have not given enough effort to is seeing who, in fact, has that higher need to be able to stay in their home. This will become part of that future assessment of those who do need home care.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Finance. Members of this House were expecting the tax review by October 31st. Last week, the Minister of Finance informed the House that the tax review was expected by mid-November. Today, we've learned that the tax review can be expected before the end of November. Mr. Speaker, it seems that the longer the House sits, the further the delay of the tax report gets pushed out. So my question for the Minister is, why is the Minister blaming the printer for these delays?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's similar to the earlier question, and I've answered the House already. When I get that report, so will you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I was wondering if maybe the Minister could ask the printer to go to extended hours to try and get it done a little quicker. But if nothing else, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If nothing else, Mr. Speaker, I assume that the Minister has asked for a date from the printers that this will be done, a specific date. So my question is, what date was the Minister informed that the tax review will be delivered to her? What date? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to assure all members that as soon as the Minister of Finance receives that report, it will be delivered to all members of this House and all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. I don't know why the Honourable Member is in a hurry to get out of here, Mr. Speaker. I'm prepared to stay here till Christmas time, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, because Mr. Speaker, because there's one thing for certain, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, because there's one thing for certain. The more that member stands up, the more Nova Scotians realize they made the right decision last night.
The honourable member for King's North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. On July 31st, Cape Split reopened after being closed for several weeks due to the impact of post-tropical storm Arthur. At the reopening, the Minister mentioned that reviews are being conducted on both Cape Split and Blommenden Provincial Park. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister is, can the Minister please inform the House of what this review consists of and whether the results will be made public?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There's an ongoing review across government departments when it comes to all programs and services that we deliver. Our parks are part of that review. Through that review so far, what I can inform the member is Cape Split Park has been listed as one of our signature parks in the province and will be treated as such moving forward.
The Honourable Member for King's North.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer, and I do commend him on the fact that Cape Split is a signature park in the province. I really do feel that way, too. It's an awesome spot. Mr. Speaker, meanwhile, two toilets purchased by the department for use at the end of the trail remain in storage. They have been there for almost 2 years. Can the Minister inform this House of what plan there is for these toilets to be installed?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Of course, there were two outhouses purchased by the previous government. That government clearly didn't do the analysis to see how they would be installed at the facility. It's a path there, Mr. Speaker, which it takes 3 hours to hike. That creates an operational challenge when it comes to servicing outhouses at the other end of the park. I don't think we're going to be able to do that. The member opposite actually referred to this issue being example of Liberal incompetence. I would say, Mr. Speaker, if the height of Liberal incompetence is two outhouses that the NDP bought, I think we're doing pretty good.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Environment. Mr. Speaker, earlier this month, I attempted to bring a constituent's concerns about pesticide runoff to officials within the Department of Environment. I was told that as the result of an ongoing pilot program, third-party reports, now including those from MLAs, would not be investigated. My question through you to the Minister is, can the Minister please explain this pilot program that reportedly started 3 months ago and which areas of the province it affects?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, what I can advise the member opposite through you is that she hasn't brought her concern forward to me. I'd be happy to hear what her concern is there with that particular situation and happy to look into it for her.
The Honourable Minister, member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, I would think that the minister would know what's going on in his department. And, Mr. Speaker, none of my colleagues were made aware of this pilot program either. And it seems counterintuitive that an elected official whose purpose is to bring constituency issues and concerns to government is unable to do so. So my question through you to the minister, can the minister please explain why his new policy, one that MLAs were not made aware of, no longer permits MLAs to bring concerns to officials in the Department of Environment and no longer allows for anonymous tips from the public?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, again, I thank the member for the question. I guess there's a couple of responses that address that concern. One of them is an issue or concern that's been raised by members of the opposition parties throughout this session regarding FOIPOP legislation. It seems the only area of concern that the members opposite in the opposition parties have about FOIPOP applications and the freedom of information. What the members opposite forget about is that the second part of that legislation refers to protection of personal information, Mr. Speaker. So I suggest that the member opposite can certainly bring issues of concern forward to the department, but with respect to providing information relating to those that may be of assistance, we may have some challenges there respecting the protection of personal information that may be of concern there, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Community Services. On October 1st, during question period, the Minister of Community Services said that said about Phase 3 of the Riverview Adult Residential Centre. She said, cancelling it really didn't stop 32 beds. The actual construction of that Phase 3 will still finish, but I have said repeatedly under this minister that there will not be one more institutionalized bed built in Nova Scotia. So my question today, Mr. Speaker, is if the 32 beds didn't stop, but there won't be one more bed built and the construction of Phase 3 will finish, what will the space created by the construction of Phase 3 be used for?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you for the question. That space will actually be used for recreational facilities, and we've also talked to the people at Riverview that perhaps we can turn it into small options, because I've made it clear there will be no more institutional beds being built in the province of Nova Scotia, and we have asked all service providers to be flexible in how they're going to be designing any ongoing construction or expansion for any of those facilities.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that answer. In a July 10th newspaper article, the Minister said that the money that isn't used on this facility will be put back into other care options for people in Pictou County. She said these monies will be available to invest for persons with disabilities for that area. So my question today for the Minister is, can you tell this House how much, if any, money you anticipate will be unused on the Riverview yep. facility.
The Honourable Member, Minister of Community Services.
I don't have, thank you for that question. I don't have that figure right now. I know that in the process of stopping the construction and redesigning what happens, there were additional costs, but I have made a commitment that anything that is left over will go back into the Pictou County area in SPD transformation, and I've made that quite clear.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Acting Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, the Crowdis Bridge, an important link for the people in the Margaritis, it's in the works to be replaced. And at one time there was talk of having a meeting for the community to give them some input from the community. Can the Acting Minister, I know this may be difficult on the fly here, if they can't explain if that's going to happen, could they find out if that meeting is going to happen for the benefit of the community? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources on behalf of the Minister of Transportation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll take that question under advisement, deliver it to the Minister of Transportation, and hopefully provide that member with a response in due time.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have another doozy that probably can't be answered today either. The other question I had is if the minister would be able to give an update to the House on what's happening with that bridge. Perhaps the honourable member can carry that question to the minister with the hopes of getting an answer as well.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources on behalf
Mr. Speaker,
of the Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, it would be my pleasure.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Environment. Last week, the United Nations Panel on Climate Change released their concluding assessment. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said, and I quote, "Leaders must act. Time is not on our side." And the Ivany Report also recognizes that primary industries will face ongoing pressure adapting to changes caused by climate change. So my question, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister is this. What steps is the Minister of Environment taking to ensure Nova Scotia's primary industries are prepared to deal with climate change?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for for raising an important question in the legislature. Mr. Speaker, climate change is an issue that's been ongoing for some time and is certainly gaining significant prominence both in Nova Scotia and across the world, in particular in the last month or so. What I can let the members of this House know that in I believe September or October, we had the national meeting of ministers of environment. And at that meeting, for the first time in 8 years, we entered into an agreement to maintain climate change as a standing agenda item in the years going forward with our meetings across the country. And that was with the consent of both the federal party as well as all provincial and territorial ministers of environment. We're certainly taking this issue very seriously, Mr. Chair.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do thank the Minister for that response, and I agree with him that this is a very important issue for all of us going forward. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia's Environmental Goals and Sustainable Prosperity Act, or EGSPA, requires the province to develop a strategy by 2014 to advance the growth of the green economy and implement the strategy accordingly. So, Mr. Speaker, we are nearing the end of 2014, and my question for the Minister is this. When can Nova Scotians expect to see a finalized greener economy strategy, including a plan for implementation?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it pleases me greatly to be able to rise to talk to the Greener Economy Strategy for Nova Scotians. This is a project that we've been working on, Mr. Speaker. It, despite the 2014 timeline, Mr. Speaker, that really only gave me 1 year to work on it because there had been no work leading up to that point in time. It would have been fantastic, Mr. Speaker, had there been more work done leading to my time in office, but I assure the member opposite and all members of this legislature that we'll have that strategy the door, but I'd also like to encourage people that I don't believe that this strategy is something that's going to be a final product. I believe it's going to be a work in progress, Mr. Speaker, because we're looking forward. There are a lot of transformational initiatives that can come out of this work, and I look forward to bringing it forward to this House and all Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Health and Wellness. Mr. Speaker, last week in this House, I asked a question to the Minister about a meeting that's going to take place on the Northside General after the House rises. Mr. Speaker, beings were still here this week, and this meeting was scheduled tomorrow. I just guess why I asked the Minister, is that meeting still on, and what time and where?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, yes, things can change here in the House in terms of our future, but, you know, I have a Deputy Minister who can gather the facts and make sure that we get solutions for Northside Hospital.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount. Order, please. Good to see you, though. time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources on an introduction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I have two dear friends with me in the House today. Joyce Nickerson and her daughter Susan Nickerson. Joyce is a constituent of mine, and Susan is her daughter who's living here in Halifax. Joyce is also one of the longest-standing conservative volunteers that we have in Yarmouth County, and which we, of course, don't hold against her. But I want to ensure that the House provides both our guests with a very warm welcome.
The Honourable Member for Fairview, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I beg leave to make an introduction as well.
Permission granted.
Thank you. If I can draw the members' attention to the East Gallery, where Steve Hiscock,